So for me, it's seeing the shift in the data, seeing improvements in health outcomes, and knowing that you're part of that work, and that's really, really rewarding. And then, of course, when you get to hear patient feedback and you get to hear back from them, and they tell you about how great they're doing and how they're now able to do things that they never were able to do before, and really seeing patients thriving and enjoying life. Because sometimes, good numbers don't always translate to a better patient experience, but this time it did. And that really makes you feel good.
Welcome to QualityCast North, a podcast dedicated to showcasing healthcare quality improvement across northern British Columbia. Casting today from the traditional territories of the Kleklaytonay and Tsintsiyan First Nations are your hosts.
I'm Cher Chewy.
And I'm Lee Cameron.
You're listening to QualityCast North. Welcome back, listeners. In today's episode, we're returning to Vancouver Island and the community of Cowichan, where chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, or COPD, is our topic. Patients with COPD are often regular visitors to emergency departments because of their limited respiratory reserve and propensity to recurrent chest infections. This in turn makes exacerbations of COPD one of the most common reasons for hospital admission. But what if we could get upstream, identify the exacerbations earlier and prevent the emergency room visits and admissions in the first place? Here to talk about their highly successful and award-winning improvement work doing just this are our three guests today, Dr. Zoe Pullen, Ina Al-Sakran, and Donna Ajonatop. Welcome, all of you, and thank you for joining us today. Now, we always start our interviews with learning a little bit about our guests. So I'm wondering if you can each tell us a little bit about yourselves and your roles and where you work. And can we start off with you, Zoe?
Sure. So my name is Zoe Pullen, and I'm calling in from the unceded and traditional territory of the Cowichan tribes, which is part of the Coast Salish peoples who have cared for and stewarded this land. And as a healthcare provider, I recognize the lasting impacts of colonization on Indigenous health and well-being. I commit to listening with humility, learning from Indigenous voices, and taking meaningful action to advance cultural safety, equity, and reconciliation in the care we provide to individuals, families, and communities. So I've resided and worked as a physician in Cowichan since 1993. Initially, I practiced full-service family medicine for 30 years, and I retired from that just 1 year ago. And now my work focuses on administration as medical lead for the Department of Family Practice for Cowichan District Hospital. And I'm also working part-time doing clinical work as a hospitalist.
My name is Donna Joanne Tapp, and I'm an operational and project director at Island Health, leading a community health and care plan project in the Cowichan area. I'm a master's prepared registered nurse with about 40 years of experience in acute care, public health, and community care, with a project management certification, lean certification, and resource demand optimization experience. I've been actively involved in new service development for over 18 years in various different roles, and I really enjoy navigating the complexities of implementing large-scale improvements and improving the quality of outcomes over time. I'd also like to acknowledge that I am calling in today and joining you from the ancestral territory of Cowichan tribes. Thank you.
Hi, everyone. My name is Lina Sakran, and I'm calling in today from the lands of the unceded and still occupied lands of the Lekwungen speaking people, where I have the privilege to raise my children, work, live, and play. So in my role, I'm an embedded health services researcher and evaluation consultant, and I work alongside clinical leaders and point of care teams to support quality improvement and the implementation of evidence-based practice. I completed my PhD at the University of Saskatchewan and postdoc at UBC, and I have a focus in chronic disease surveillance, healthcare utilization, and health policy-related evaluation.
Your quality improvement work on COPD is based in Cowichan on Vancouver Island, and I wonder whether you can tell us a little bit about this community and who lives there.
So the Cowichan Valley is located on the southern half of Vancouver Island, and it's nestled in between the two large urban centers of Victoria and Nanaimo. We have a population of approximately 100,000 people who live in urban and rural settings. The Cowichan Valley is an area which is projected to see significant population growth, especially in our 75 plus demographic, which is anticipated to double by 2035. The area also boasts some of the highest levels of poverty on the island, as well as high levels of chronic disease, such as COPD and diabetes, for example. So we have some really significant challenges to address now and into the future. The service area that we have extends 30 miles in each direction from the central hub of Duncan and includes communities on smaller neighboring islands as well. The area is quite diverse as it's home to Cowichan tribes, BC's largest First Nation community, along with seven other distinct Indigenous communities, including the Cowichan Valley Métis Nation and the House of Friendship.
I'll talk about the medical community, perhaps. So the Cowichan medical community has really evolved significantly, particularly in the past 5 years or so. Primary care is generally provided in private clinics, which are often some combination of family physicians, nurse practitioners, and RNs. The unattached population, so those without a primary care provider, are able to access care at our newly opened urgent primary care clinic. And there's also two urgent care clinics in Ladysmith and Chemainus that offer primary care generally to more acute problems. Currently, there are 22 family physicians who care for their own patients when they are hospitalized, and they work alongside a growing hospitalist service that was started in some form several years ago, but was contracted and formalized as a service with Island Health in March 2025.
Okay, well, let's move on to the project itself now, on CABD. Can you tell us what was the original problem that prompted this improvement project? And maybe tell us a little bit about the impact of this problem.
The catalyst for change originated with the planning of a new hospital in Cowichan that's going to replace our aging building that was built in 1967 and no longer meets the needs of the community. It was really early in the planning that our executive noted that the projected demand for the service in the community was going to exceed the proposed bed base for this new building. And instead of advocating for a bigger hospital, the executive made a decision to test a method of targeted community investment that could create acute care avoidance to help to make the bed base a better match for that projected demand. So a methodology was created where we looked at high user groups of acute care and looked at best practice literature to review and find models of care that showed high confidence in the ability to reduce acute care utilization. That end result became what we call now the community or Cowichan Health and Care Plan. And it's a multi-year plan that's designed to improve care in the community while reducing acute care utilization, with a goal of 21 beds a day avoided by the time the hospital opens here in 2027, and 44 beds a day by 2035 to match the projected demand. Now, COPD was one of those top five client groups that we identified as a high user group that could be successfully supported in the community. This wasn't surprising to us because Cowichan has some of the highest COPD rates on the island. We have airshed quality issues, and we have significant projected growth in that 75 plus population, who are the age group that are more likely to experience chronic disease such as COPD. Our area didn't have any formal resources or programming in place to support COPD clients in the community, and this meant that COPD care fell squarely on the shoulders of our primary care providers.
The problem from the provider perspective, I will speak as a previous family physician. So I feel educated in the process of COPD exacerbation prevention and chronic care. I actually attended many special seminars and was well versed in the various flow sheets and the protocols and the planning tools to use with patients when counseling them on this chronic illness. However, most of the primary care providers were carrying more patients than we could comfortably take that kind of time with. As the primary care provider crisis was getting worse, the pressure was building to take on more patients, so the time was more of a problem. So all of these factors led to a frustrating scenario where we had the tools, but not the time or support to use them. And yes, as a family physician providing inpatient care at the time, I watched with frustration as my COPD patients were admitted to hospital for exacerbations that possibly could have been prevented. Additionally, I was sad that those patients did not have the information they could have to take better control of this chronic illness, and I felt like I was letting them down all around.
Thank you for that introduction to the problem, and kudos to your senior leadership for setting out that vision at the beginning of reducing hospital admissions and taking an upstream perspective. It's one thing though to identify your high risk group, and it's another to actually do something about that and reducing the emissions from that group. And so I'm hoping you can tell us now about the actual nuts and bolts of your project What was your goal, and how did you set about achieving a reduction in emergency room visits and hospital admissions in this cohort of patients?
So the ultimate goal of this project was to improve the quality of care, keep people out of the hospital and emergency departments, and then also to improve patient flow at the hospital. So to do that, they implemented the Inspire COPD model, and they took that model, which was from Dalhousie University, and it's a community-based model. Many other areas in Canada have implemented that model, and it showed really positive results in terms of cost effectiveness and also a reduction in acute care utilization. And what was also noted about this model is that the reduction was sustained over time, so the gains were sustained even after a certain amount of time passed by. And what makes this project or what makes this program so great is that it's holistic and patient-centered. So it's really wraparound care for patients. And it's got several components to it. So first, as I mentioned, it's wraparound care and it's given by a specialized team. It provides patients with support to self-manage. So they provide them with action plans. They give them patient education on how to use their action plans and to identify which zone they are in and what actions they need to take. It also acknowledges the importance of providing patients with psychosocial support, knowing that anxiety can distress patients and that can also be a reason why they go to the emergency department. Now, as I mentioned, this has been implemented in several places over Canada. So approximately all, actually almost 20 places in Canada have implemented the Inspire model. And most areas remain true to the key components, but sometimes they had to adapt a few things to make it fit local needs and resources. In our area, we also adapted the model. So the Inspire model highlighted exercise therapy as a component for success, but we didn't have the resources at the time to establish that component of care. So we focused on the key items for self-management and did what we could to provide information to patients on the exercise components and encourage them to explore that through online resources or to take the lead on those exercise initiatives. Our team also added something to component that was not in the original model. So early on, they realized how important patient education was. So they established a series of educational modules and sessions for patients and their families to come together. So they were able to learn about COPD and meet other people living with that condition as well. And that was really a great addition, and the patients really, really valued it. So based on this methodology, they calculated that this program would reduce 2 to 3 beds per day for COPD clients. And our goal was to ensure each person had access to an action plan. And they also had the medications that they could use in the event of an exacerbation.
We built a business case and identified the key components that we would need in place. So we obtained funding for a respiratory therapist, a pharmacist, and a behavioral health clinician as our core team. We also wanted to make sure that our service was going to be accessible, equitable, and sustainable. So in order to facilitate this, we did a number of things as we did our service planning. To start with, we made sure we had the right people at the table. We invited physicians, we invited patient partners, and we invited community volunteer services to the table. We hired our staff early in the planning and we had them involved in all aspects of the planning so that they had some ownership of what they were going to then deliver. And through this approach of co-development and incorporating feedback from the entire group, we were able to create a service plan and workflows that met the needs of physicians, met the needs of clients, and we decided to work in a hybrid way because of the input that we were getting, offering both home and clinic appointments. We incorporated connection to community resources for services that healthcare doesn't deliver as part of our service. So things like social prescribing, transportation support, for example, all in a way that the clinicians on the team could manage and deliver. So we really wanted to make it a user-friendly service.
So I had never participated in a multidisciplinary project like this before. My experience in the past was that changes were made and primary care providers were later informed and expected to comply. And oftentimes there was a lot of head shaking amongst the providers as the processes that we were offered didn't seem to make sense on the ground level of practice. So we wondered why we weren't asked, as we could have really helped in making things work so much better for us and for our patients. So participating in this project was so exciting. Understanding the limitations and helping to provide suggestions to make the processes better, and those suggestions actually being valued and then implemented felt so engaging and empowering. And it was also very fun to be part of the project. And promoting joy in work is always something I'm ready to engage in.
This is a very unique thing because what we did was we created community services and we embedded them within the community health services team, so the home care team. And because we were able to integrate them into that service, we were able to use existing workflows. We were able to make quick connections with other community-based interdisciplinary team members, including home support services, which is important for COPD patients as well. And then we incorporated the physician lens with the community volunteer lens and just put that all together in a package. And the core group directs the clients to those services and liaises between those services.
There's a lot of moving parts here, and there are a lot of people involved. And I'm wondering, because whenever you have a lot of people involved, challenges and communication issues often arise. And I'm wondering whether you, during the implementation of this, encountered any challenges or difficulties in the project. And if you did, how did you overcome them?
Well, we absolutely did. Every new service comes with challenges. But that was our role. That was my role, to help link things together and work through those. So some of the things we came across as we moved along in the project was that we had no formal COPD service embedded in our community health services. So we had a lot of work to do with internal departments within Island Health to get the service set up and ensure that we had data collection, that our reporting requirements were fulfilled, and access to client files was appropriate. But embedding that into existing services helped us because we were able to use existing processes. So that was very helpful. About 6 months after we started the service, the broader organization introduced a respiratory technologist into the community health services teams, but they used a different model than what we had started with. So that was a challenge because we were working within the same service group. So we needed to be aligned, but we didn't want to give up our key components of care that were evidence-based and that we had started. So we did some adjusting there to make sure that we were as aligned as we could, but still maintained those key components of the model that we had prescribed to. As a part of the service, we considered a communication plan to generate interest and referral to the program. And again, we turned to our community partners who assisted us in getting the word out about that service. The Division of Family Practice distributed newsletter articles and posters to their membership. They invited us to their meetings where we could present our new service. Community pharmacists were contacted by our COPD pharmacist, and they all agreed to put our contact card and information into patient packages when they were dispensing COPD meds. And we communicated internally to all of our Island Health teams as well. So that's sort of how we tackled our communication barriers. During the project implementation, a strong focus was placed on real-time monitoring to ensure that we were achieving anticipated results. And this is where Lena's support really came into play. It required a lot of manual data collection and patient feedback, which placed extra workload on the clinicians on the project team. But the real-time monitoring did allow us to identify when workflows were not effective, and the team engaged in PDSA process improvement cycles to stay on track. And it's the real-time monitoring that was a key to successfully meeting both the needs of the patients while achieving our health and care plan goals. Another challenge that we had was that COPD has seasonal trends, and we found that referrals to the programs would slow down at certain points of the year. So we would engage our communication strategies during those times and remind people that we were there. And we now monitor referral activity and recommunicate on a regular basis now as part of our routine. We discovered that along the way, patients get education, but they don't often retain that information. So to support this, the team pivoted and developed in-person education sessions and drop-in sessions where patients can come and ask questions or just socialize with other COPD patients to share experiences. And that has worked really well. We implemented the COPD service right at the height of the COVID pandemic. Lucky us. So ensuring that the human resources that we needed were available was a challenge. We have seldom had all of our team members in place at the same time. And each time a new member joins the team dynamics have to adjust and adapt. The manager of the service has done an excellent job, though, in keeping those postings filled and supporting the team when change happens within the groups and promoting cross-functional work within the group to ensure that patients continue to receive that full package of care in a really seamless way. And overall, a great deal of attention has been paid to sustainment of the service, which isn't really a common practice in healthcare. We tend to be really great at identifying issues and creating solutions and implementing strategies, but we're really not that good at sustaining the services to achieve outcomes. So sustainment activities have been key to the success that we're seeing, and it's a key learning from our project.
So, I've got to ask, were you ultimately successful? How did you know you made a difference in the end?
That's a really good question. This program has had a huge impact and it was really significant. Before the program was launched, people living in the area with COPD didn't really have access to any sort of specialized COPD supports, but this program gave them access to specialized interdisciplinary care that really held their hand along the way when they needed it. So whether it was in the home or in the clinic, they were provided with wraparound support. This team also connected with their primary care providers, got them the action plans, got them the meds, and provided them with ongoing education to self-manage. And then they also have the phone a friend option and to look at the impact of it. So from a mixed methods evaluation perspective, so whether it's healthcare utilization, cost savings, patient and provider experience, and of course, point of care team input. And what we saw was really, really amazing. So in terms of hospitalizations and ED visits, we saw approximately a 30% reduction and a positive return on investment. We also implemented the UCOPD survey, which is a survey that looks at patient education and patient awareness in terms of implementing the COPD action plans. And what we saw was that patients were more confident in using their action plans and rescue medications. And they were also using their inhalers more appropriately and feeling generally better. And most importantly, we saw an improvement in quality of life. We heard so many positive things from both patients and providers, and patients noted how they were able to breathe easier and be more active and get out and socialize a bit more than before. And then since implementation in 2022, we have seen a number of positive impacts for people engaging in the service. So as I mentioned, the action plans and support to self-manage, people are feeling more confident in their self-management abilities. And as I mentioned before, our economic analysis showed positive return on investment. So this program is saving the hospital bed days and saving money as well. So all in all, it is a great program.
I was just going to jump in and say, from my perspective, as soon as patients had engaged with the outpatient COPD team, I noticed improvements in my practice right away. Patients were coming to me well educated and able to advocate well for what they needed to maximize control of their illness. So instead of seeing them sick and treating them after the exacerbation was well established, I was not even necessarily needing to see them at all and simply refilling their prescriptions that they could have on hand for the next well-managed exacerbation that they were able to get control of much earlier than had they had to wait for a visit with me. So they were not requiring hospitalization nearly as often.
And that's an amazing result. It's an incredibly comprehensive program, well implemented, and it's been successful on multiple indicators. So, congratulations to you. That's fantastic. And I think you alluded, I mean, you've shown it to be cost effective, which goes on to my next question, was how do you plan to sustain this work and keep it going? But I think the answer is right there in that your operations are so happy with it, the fact that they're saving money on the admissions side, that they're happy to continue supporting it. Would that be a correct analysis?
Yes, that's absolutely correct. And I think for sustainment, we really put a lot of thought into that as well. As I mentioned before, that we're not really good at that piece. So we've purposefully built some pieces in. So the program received ongoing funding. So those positions will stay. And we've built sustainment activities into our service workflows. So we have weekly staff huddles, we have real-time monitoring and PDSA process improvement, which we continually engage in as we need to. And as the project team, I also assumed operational responsibility for the service because we have accountability to achieve and maintain those bed day avoidance goals. So we have We have a reason for it to continue to be sustained, right? And I think one of the things that I alluded to before was that we purposefully integrated this team into community health services to promote interdisciplinary connection and care planning, and that in itself sustains the program. It's not a standalone thing. It's got an entire, it's embedded in a group, and the group sustains it and supports it.
Yeah, that's an important key piece. So this is a big project. It took a lot of implementation. There were issues in developing the service, but it's been so successful. It would surprise me if there were not other communities in the province, or even further afield, who would really love to implement a similar service as yours. But given what you went through and what you know now, what advice would you give them in setting up a similar service in their community?
Well, I would start with the methodology that was devised for the health and care plan. It works on the premise that not all areas require the same supports. And that's in contrast to our historic investment strategy that we use in healthcare, where we try to make all areas equal. Instead, I think we need to think about equitable, which may mean placing more resources in one area versus another for the same client group based on needs. I think the data needs to lead us where we need to go. So that would be one piece of advice. I think also you need to really invest in building strong working relationships with your community and make sure that you have the right people at the planning table. So taking time to bring community partners and physicians to the table helped us co-create a service that considered the needs and strengths of multiple participants in that circle of care. And working together, we really created a wraparound service that provides more value for the clients than we could have done on our own. So the power of collective impact has really been felt in this project, and it shouldn't be dismissed. And I think investing and spending time in that area is pays off in many ways. The real-time monitoring and the focus on sustainment is key to achieving long-term gains. Nothing in healthcare stays static, and you really need to be open to change and keep your eye on the prize. And so having that real-time monitoring helps us to do that. And in quality improvement, we can see improvement early on, but after time, things tend to revert back to once what they were. And so what we've learned is that to sustain the gains, we have to put effort into sustainment. You can't just walk away once you see that things are working. You have to keep your eyes on that data and keep things moving in the right direction. And using those PDSA cycles and keeping that sense of quality improvement is a way to make sure that you're always doing the best service that you can.
I think one of the key learnings that we learned from this program, as well as other programs that Dawn has implemented, is that you really have to adapt to local resources and need. So what might work in your community or what your community needs may not be what another community needs. So you really have to understand what your patients need are, what are your strengths, what are your resources, and leverage that when you're implementing a new program.
It's been really enlightening, actually, hearing about this work. So it's a really, really wonderful project. But I happen to know that this is only one of many successful QI projects that have come out of Cowichan region over the last few years. And you seem to have found yourself into a bit of a nice little groove there when it comes to quality improvement. And we all know that QI is hard and uphill work. And I would love to know what keeps you motivated in continuing to do this work, and how do you avoid burning out? Because it is hard work. You know, what gets you up in the morning when it comes to quality improvement?
For many of us, we entered into healthcare because we just really genuinely want to make a difference in people's lives and help support them to navigate through their ups and downs of health. I've been working in healthcare for about 40 years, and it's not really often that you get to lead an initiative where you see real improvement and change. So this has been really exciting to have the chance to work with a diverse team and to develop services that have an impact and fill the gaps in service for the community that we're living in. When we started this project, we actually didn't know if this health and care plan methodology would actually achieve the goals that they had set for us. But it's been so exciting to see the positive shift in the outcome metrics and hear the patient and the care provider feedback that we've gotten along the way. So getting up in the morning is easy when you feel like what you're doing is making a difference.
So for me, it's seeing the shift in the data, seeing improvements in health outcomes, and knowing that you're part of that work, and that's really, really rewarding. And then, of course, when you get to hear patient feedback and you get to hear back from them, and they tell you about how great they're doing and how they're now able to do things that they never were able to do before, and really seeing patients thriving and enjoying life. Because sometimes, good numbers don't always translate to a better patient experience, but this time it did. And that really makes you feel good.
This was my first experience in quality improvement. And back in the busy family medicine practice, once the project was up and running and referring to it was as easy as just typing a few words in a form on a patient's electronic medical record, I soon started to see patients coming in with exactly the knowledge and empowerment that I had wanted to offer for so many years and wasn't able. So speaking to those patients about their COPD was so much easier for me, as they really understood the illness and the tools that we had to maximize their management of control. Knowing that they had their COPD care maximized was a huge relief, and ongoing engagement to fine-tune their care improved my gratification in my work at the end of the day. We really needed this help. So on the joy and gratification in work monitor, things were definitely improved.
That's well deserved because the results have been remarkable. So that's great to hear. And that's also a lovely place to finish our interview today. So thank you for joining us and taking us through this wonderful and very successful improvement work in Cowichan. I have to say, your Health Quality BC Quality Award for this work was extremely well deserved. And you certainly earned that award with flying colors. You've been listening to Dr. Zoe Pullen, Lina Alsakhrin, and Donna Jonatap talking about their award-winning quality improvement work with COPD patients on Vancouver Island. To hear about other similar and successful healthcare quality improvement projects, check out our back catalogue of previous podcast episodes. But for now, it's goodbye from us here at QualityCast North, Dr. Zoe Pullen, Donna Jonatap, and Lina Alsakhrin, and your host, I'm Sher Chewy. And you've been listening to QualityCast North.
If you enjoyed today's episode, check out our other episodes on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you find your podcasts, and subscribe to our channel. We'd love to hear from you. If you have a question for us about healthcare quality improvement, email us at qualitycomms@northernhealth.ca, and your question could feature on a future episode. QualityCast North is sponsored by the Physician Quality Improvement Initiative, or PQI. PQI is a flagship program of the Specialist Services Committee, a collaboration between the Provincial Ministry of Health and the Doctors of BC, with representation for the provincial health authorities. This episode was co-produced by Dr. Sher Chewy and Lee Cameron, with technical support from Levi Giles and Matt Walker of Expression North. Original music by Daniel Chewy. Further information about today's guest is available in our show notes on our website at nhpqi.ca.